Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, February 19th, 2025, on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. My co-host Ron Meniza is going to the chiropractor, so he's not with me today. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whjs.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. In terms of health, again, still feeling pretty good. Haven't had tremors in a very long time. In fact, talking with my naturopath about the possibility of having my co-infections tested, but we'll see when I am going to get tested for those things. Knees, joints are doing pretty good. I do have a tricky spot in my mid-back where I get a pinchy sensation in my my left ribs, and my chiropractor's working on that. Knees are pretty good, and I blame the green-lipped muscle. That was the big thing that I added, and it seems to really be helping. I also switched my collagen up, and I'm taking a collagen that has some nicotinamide riboside in it, which is a wonderful anti-inflammatory. So that's vitamin B3 and nicotinic acid, niacinamide, or nicotinamide riboside, are similar, and they have been shown to be anti-inflammatory in cases of osteoarthritis. And I'm very excited because I'm taking this collagen and it does not seem to be upsetting my stomach, because I do have an issue with taking complement of B-complex. So when I say complement, as you can see, I'm stretching it out because I'm looking at a list of all the B vitamins in my head in front of my face. And when I take a B-complex, it doesn't seem to matter whether it's food-based or not, or high quality or low quality. After a while, I seem to get stomach upset from it. However, on alternate days, not every day of the week, I take activated vitamin B12 in the form of adenosyl hydroxy B12. I don't generally recommend cyanocobalamin. It is synthetic B12, and it's not in a form that your body uses, although your body can convert it to methylcobalamin. I shouldn't say it doesn't work. If you take cyanocobalamin, which is synthetic B12, which you can get cheaply at the drugstore or at your favorite shop, your B12 level in your blood will rise, because the B12 level, when they test B12, they are looking at whether you take cyanocobalamin, methylcobalamin, or adenosyl hydroxycobalamin, your B12, the test from the lab recognizes all of those, and they do make your B12 rise. So most people can use it. If you have a methylation issue, for example, you have an MTHFR anomaly, which is something you can talk to your doctor or naturopath about testing, you will do better if you have methylated forms of B vitamins. And so methylcobalamin or adenosyl or hydroxycobalamin is going to be better for you. And because that one is better for most people, that's the one I recommend mostly. So when I'm recommending vitamin B12, I recommend there's a combo adenosyl and hydroxycobalamin that you can get. And it's high potency. It comes in 2,000 microgram caps. So most of the time I have people not take it every day. And I don't take it every day. I take it 4 to 5 days a week. And it's driven my B12, my serum B12 up nicely. And I do have this methylation defect. I have one copy of the gene for MTHFR. So I like to take methylated B vitamins. And if I take them separately, so I take the adenosyl hydroxycobalamin, I take pyridoxal 5-phosphate, which is the activated form of vitamin B6, which is in the methylated pathway. And I also take activated folic acid. So that's methyl tetrahydrofolate. So I take that as well. And I don't take those daily. The methyl tetrahydrofolate, I'm not taking a huge dose. I'm taking 400 micrograms about 3 or 4 times a week. And likewise, the B6, 3 or 4 times a week. By the way, pyridoxal 5-phosphate is a great anti-inflammatory and something that's good, once again, for joints and pain and stuff, because vitamin B6, I'm assuming it's because vitamin B6. Vitamin B6 definitely has anti-inflammatory benefits, but it also happens to be a cofactor in serotonin metabolism. And serotonin is a neurotransmitter that's active all over your body, in your brain, and it is an integral part of the pain pathway. So magnesium and vitamin B6 are part of that serotonin pathway. And I, of course, take both. And I also eat magnesium in the form of nuts and seeds and lots of leafy greens and other green vegetables. I eat broccoli and all kinds of greens and spinach and stuff like that. And I eat those pretty much every day. I try to get something green in. Okay. Not absolutely every day, but, you know, it's unusual for us not to get something green in. If we are eating at home, we're either going to have a salad, we're going to have, they've been able to grow spinach at Tobacco Road. Can you even believe it? They grow it under the hoops in February. It's unbelievable. And so we've been getting some spinach, some fantastic spinach from Tobacco Road, where, and over Tobacco Road, they know how to grow those greens with incredibly nutritive properties. When we eat that, it's a blessing. And we make it into sag, and sag, S-A-A-G, is that's pureed Indian spinach. So it's pureed spinach with some kind of fat, coconut oil. You're supposed to put yogurt in it. I don't put, if we have non-dairy yogurt, Ron will put that in, but we didn't have unsweetened non-dairy yogurt in the house, so he didn't put it in for me. He put in virgin coconut oil, and for him, he put in some dairy yogurt. I just need to make sure we have some non-dairy yogurt in the house. I do have a favorite brand that is very clean and really tastes like yogurt and has wonderful active cultures in it. So we need to keep some of that in the house just to have to mix into recipes. So I'm going to make sure we have that on hand. Anyway, when you puree the spinach, thing about greens and any vegetables is that in order to get inside the cell walls and get the nutrition from them, you need to really chew them, or you need to puree them, or you need to cook them. And so on the other hand, when you eat stuff raw, as long as you chew it well, there's things you're going to get that get cooked down when you cook the vegetable. So when you cook a vegetable, you're probably going to downregulate the amount of enzymes that are in the vegetables. Those are going to degrade some. But on the other hand, when you eat a leaf and you distress it, or you even puree it, the difference between drinking matcha, which is powdered green tea, versus just steeped green tea from leaves. And the difference from eating a spinach leaf and pureeing it is that you're going to get inside those cell walls. And inside the cell walls, you have all the carotenoids, all the, so your lutein, your zeaxanthin, your beta carotene, and you're also going to have, it's going to be easier to get at the water-soluble minerals as well. So, and the vitamin K, which is a fat-soluble vitamin. And so the water-soluble vitamins, like your Bs and your vitamin C, you're going to get at those more readily. And you're also going to be able to get your minerals, anything that grows in the earth is going to have lots of minerals. Definitely going to have a lot of magnesium, because once again, magnesium is a component of chlorophyll, and chlorophyll has magnesium at its center. So getting the magnesium on board, and, you know, getting some leafy greens in your diet every day is going to be helpful. And magnesium, of course, is going to be helpful in that pain pathway, as I said. So I'm getting the magnesium, I'm getting the B6, and I'm getting a good collagen that has that nicotinamide riboside in it, and it's not bothering my stomach. It's just when they take the B complex together, it doesn't seem like which one I take. If you are taking a B complex and you've noticed that you do get stomach upset with it, you can consider trying a food-based B complex, and you can get those at your friendly local naturopaths, or you can get it at your friendly local health food store. Just ask for a food-based B complex. I was doing just fine with a food-based B complex for a long time until one day I wasn't. I was noticing I was taking my protein shake and I was burping and getting that uncomfortable feeling, kind of queasy. And so I stopped taking the B complex and it went away. I'm like, ah, disappointed. But when I take those Bs separately, it seems to be fine. And I don't take them every day either. And so I take little higher doses of specific ones that I need, and you know, hope for that I'm getting the rest elsewhere. So anyway, one of the ones that gave me a lot of stomach upset, I thought I was having migraines, but what I was really having, I mean, they were probably migraines, but they were caused by Lyme disease, because I'm not getting headaches right now because I've been taking the herbs for so long. But I was getting migraine-like phenomena. And so I thought, oh, I have migraines now, so I'm going to take high-dose riboflavin. So I took the high-dose riboflavin. That definitely gave me a stomach ache. So it's the vitamin B2, and it was a high dose. It's 400 milligrams. So that was giving me an upset stomach. So I stopped that, and I don't have the upset stomach. So not having an upset stomach is good. So one of the things is, you know, I have to take this lime compound that has all these different herbs in it. What I do is I put the herbs in water and then I let it simmer for as much as 2.5 hours in a crock pot to burn off as much of the alcohol as possible. So just throwing it in hot water and letting it sit for a couple of minutes doesn't burn off a lot of the alcohol. I read about that. Some people let their herbal compounds sit in the sun for a couple of days. I said, I'm not going to do that, but I will put it in a crock pot and let it sit for, you know, like 2.5 hours. So I do that. If I get home late, I let it sit for just an hour. And then I turn it off, let it cool. I learned that I have to let it cool because I had a lovely 20-ounce glass bottle and I wasn't waiting for the liquid to cool. And I melted the bottle. So can't do that unless you pour it into Pyrex. And I don't have a Pyrex container. I have a Pyrex measuring cup, but I don't have a Pyrex container. So now I turn the crock pot down and then I wait till it's cool, maybe 15, 20 minutes or more if necessary. And then I pour it into a glass container and then it goes in the fridge. And then I have my 3 doses over the course of the day. So one of the things I want to do is that sometimes if I take it on an empty stomach, because you have to take it on an empty stomach because the modified citrus pectin needs to not have anything in front of it to get into your body. So I am going to start putting some ginger syrup in it to protect my tummy a little bit more. And, you know, it's a nice anti-inflammatory. Ginger is a great herb for all kinds of things. And ginger agrees with me. It's a great anti-inflammatory for everything. It's great for your joints. It's great for pain in general. It's great for your whole digestive system. And, you know, it's great for queasiness and nausea. And it's also great for helping vestibular problems. So if you get lightheaded and dizzy regularly, ginger is great for that. And if you're having acute dizziness, ginger is a great thing to do. So you could have a tonic that has some ginger in it and some salt. And that can be an electrolyte replenisher, especially if you're having lightheadedness. So anyway, so that's what's going on with me. Ron is, I'm very excited because Ron's going to see the chiropractor in the next couple of days, and I'm going to accompany him to that visit. So that's one of the reasons I'm here, because he's going to see the chiropractor at a time when we usually record our shows, and I want to go with him. So I'm recording this show in advance so I can be there. So I'm psyched about that. I want to see what Dr. Scott says about his poor spine and his musculoskeletal situation. So that'll be very interesting. It's cold out today. It's in the 20s. It's very bright and sunny, but it's in the 20s, and tomorrow we're going to get a lot of snow. I don't know what that's going to do to my patient care schedule. It might, it might make it so that I have less patients, and it might also make it so that I have to do more virtuals. So we'll see how that goes. That'll be exciting. It's supposed to snow in the winter, and you're supposed to get a couple of days where you have to upend your schedule because it snowed. So we'll see how that goes tomorrow. Because it looks like it's going to be snowy, and it's going to start right when people are supposed to first be getting to the office, and going to snow right through the afternoon, and then it's going to turn into ice, and then it's going to turn into rain. I don't think people are going to want to drive. I might not want to drive. I don't know if my staff's going to want to drive. So we're going to see how that goes. So if you're going to drive in snow, please be very careful. Consider not doing it. You could stay home. Staying home and resting and relaxing, having a hot beverage is a great thing to do. In the interest of hygge, that Danish tradition of hanging around in the house and snuggling and leaning into winter, the Mansfield Public Library is having reading challenge bingo, which I'm very excited about, and has things, all the different things you'd expect from a reading challenge. Read a mystery novel, read something that is less than 200 pages long, have a hot beverage while you're sitting and reading, there's a whole bunch of things. And if you, and it's an honor system, and this one is not virtual, it's on paper. So in order to do it, you have to like check things off and go into the library and give them a card, and you'll, and they put a card in a raffle for you, and then you can win prizes. It's cute. So of course I'm going to try to get into that. I have to see what's on the bingo card to see what all I have to do for it. And the nice thing is if you do one task, you get a card that goes in the cup, in the drawing, and you get drawn for that thing. So you don't have to complete the whole thing to get drawn for a prize. So that's kind of cool. They're very cute. So I encourage you to read and participate in your local public library, which I think is a wonderful thing. I was not participating in my local public library much until I got sick with, post-vaccine and Lyme disease, and realized that I needed to relax more. And I found that reading paper books as opposed to on screens was very relaxing. It was one of the things that I could do to calm my vagus nerve down, or well, access my vagus nerve and make me calmer. So now I enjoy reading paper books, you know, not just reading them on my tablet. I do have a couple of books on my tablet that I do want to get to, but I do really appreciate the paper books and being able to go and get all kinds of books. And or it's very exciting to go there because you get excited about getting a book, you come home with the book, and then you get to first read it. It's just lovely. It's just a wonderful service, the public library. So this show is going to be played on WHUS on February 19th. So we will have already done the Chocolate Festival and the Willimantic Food Co-op birthday party and our anniversary. So I'm going to wait till I make another show with Ron to talk to you about those things, because we will have participated in those great activities together. All right, so here's something that I wanted to throw in honor of Valentine's Day. Interestingly, so I'll throw this in. What I want to talk about is briefly is health for menopausal sexual symptoms. And did you know that ladies who were older, like me, I'm 61, we still like to have sex? Who would have thought? Last night, we watched an episode of Brilliant Minds, which I really am enjoying. Zachary Quinto stars in it. And, you know, you can watch it streaming. If you don't have streaming TV or whatever, you can go onto YouTube and probably see excerpts from it. But they had a lovely episode last night where there was an 80-year-old lady who had two grown sons who were very concerned about her. And the premise of this show is that Zachary Quinto is playing a gentleman by the name of Oliver Wolf, who's a neurologist, and it's in honor of Oliver Wolf Sacks, who was a famous neurologist, but he was probably 20, 30 years older. I'm not sure if he's still with us, but he was 23, at least 20 or 30 years older than Zachary Quinto. So he came of age in an earlier time, and he was British and also Jewish and also gay. And so in his time, he felt that he needed to be closeted. And of course, in 2025, you don't need to be closeted so much. And so I think it's wonderful that you watch TV and you have gay characters that they just happen to be gay, and it's not a big deal in the setting of the show. This character just happens to be gay and goes out with women. I mean, I'm watching several shows that's going on. You have Sarah and, I don't know, Kira, who's in Matlock, this adorable gay couple. And then you have The Irrational, that show, the sister, what's her name? This awesome actress who plays the sister of the main character, Alec, and his sister is gay, and they just show them having relationships and being normal, and that it's gay. And then in The Nice Thing About Brilliant Minds is the main character just happens to be gay because Oliver Sacks was gay. And so they're working on, they're having a relationship. And you get to see what goes on for them, and it's lovely. Well, last night, they had this character who was an 80-year-old woman, and she had these two grown sons who were very concerned about her. They were bringing her in because she was living in a nursing home, and she was displaying hypersexuality. So she was visiting a lot of the men's rooms and having sex with them. And the sons were up in arms because it wasn't appropriate for an 80-year-old lady. And I looked at that and said, who are you? Really? You know, I think if you want to have sex at any age, you should have sex. It's fine. And that was what this show was about. The show was about different people in the show having sex. Happy Valentine's Day, right? So anyway, this lady, they were concerned that the lady had a neurological condition that was causing her to be hypersexual. And I said, this show was, it was either on The Good Doctor or House. There was a character like that. And in the show, whichever show it was, she asked not to be fixed because she wanted to enjoy her sexuality. And in that show, they didn't fix her. In this show, spoiler alert, they did. But she still wanted to be sexual. So they had her... the sons didn't want her to be sexual like that. It turned out that she did, in fact, have a condition because she had a psychotic break, and it was because she was having a TIA, a transient ischemic attack. So that's like a mini stroke. So she had that going on, and then they tested her some more. They did a lumbar puncture, and they got some cerebral spinal fluid and found out that she had neurosyphilis. And at the stage of neurosyphilis she had was like stage 3, so that meant she wasn't contagious, but it wasn't her nervous system, and it was causing hypersexuality. So they said, look, some people, we can give you antibiotics and kill the neurosyphilis. And she, of course, said, I don't know how much time I have left. I love being sexual. She made this incredible statement, which I completely agree with, which was, when you look at me, you see an old person, but inside, you still feel like your normal self. You still feel like you are young, and you often can't understand why you can't do things that you used to be able to do. I'm starting to experience that. And so she said that, which was very affirming, and something that younger people need to hear. And especially if you're going to be a practitioner and you want to be sensitive to your clients, you want to know about that. Well, she made a decision because she was going to go home to live instead of living in the nursing home. She was going to live with her sons, and they didn't want her having, you know, guys over all the time. And they said they didn't think it was appropriate. So Oliver said, no, I'm going to talk you into this. So she at first said she declined the treatment because she wanted to remain sexual. And then they talked to her about the fact that if she didn't get the treatment, she could die sooner. And they didn't want that. And then she said, oh, all right, I'll get treated. I want to be there for my kids and my grandkids and stuff. I want to get treated. And Oliver said, listen, he went to the guys and he said, listen, she wants to be sexual. We're going to treat her, but we're also going to give her libido enhancing medication. So they're giving her flibanserin, which is something, it's a real drug that I've seen advertised that you can get. And we're going to give her that so she has an enhanced libido, and just be aware she's going to come live with you, but you're going to have to hear in her inappropriate the table of her new boyfriend and her sexual exploits, and she's going to bring guys over. Deal with it. This is going to make her happy. And fortunately, the guys went, oh, okay, we want mom to be happy. Because the thing is, if they let her do what she wants and it makes her happy, see, sex is a thing that makes you happy. So why would you want your mom to not have sex? Right? I mean, you could set some boundaries, like maybe we don't want to hear you so much. Maybe you have white noise or you close the door, but let her do her thing. I mean, I'm hoping to be in that circumstance that I should be so blessed to be able to be sexual at 80. It's harder now at my age, but you feel like that your whole life. So it was really lovely. So happy Valentine's Day. So just so you know that there is a drug called flibanserin. I'm not going to say the brand name, but it is used to enhance female sex drive. And I think that the drug is not off patent yet. So when you get it, you get the brand name. I'm not 100% certain about that. But in natural medicine, what we do when somebody comes in and they're complaining of reduced libido and they want to have more libido, or they have various issues with sex that's not necessarily due to libido, there's different things that we can do for them. So one of the things we use is natural hormone replacement therapy. And I saw a good talk last year at the Connecticut Naturopathic Physicians Conference where one of my colleagues from Oregon was talking about how, look, women are living much longer. We're living into an older age and we want to enjoy our bodies, and natural hormone replacement therapy is not nearly as toxic as they thought, and you're unlikely to get cancer from it. You're much more likely not to get cancer than you are. Having said that, I prefer for, like, if women are going to do natural hormone replacement therapy, if they're doing estrogen that goes through your whole body, I think it's a good idea to also do progesterone, because estrogen is a proliferative hormone, and you just want to make sure that the estrogen isn't going to make any unhappy cells that might want to turn into cancer. So progesterone is a modulating hormone. It's anti-proliferative, whereas estrogen is proliferative. And, you know, progesterone's job is when you ovulate and you have the follicle come from your ovary, it splits into two. Half of it stays in the ovary and becomes the corpus luteum, and the other half goes out to become the future potential baby or ovum. And that corpus luteum, its job is to supply progesterone for about 2 weeks. That's the amount of time that it would take for you to conceive. And then after about 2 weeks after conception, that's when you nidate. That's when the embryo implants into the wall of the uterine lining. And at that time, you run out of progesterone in your corpus luteum. You need the progesterone to enhance implantation and create a great bed for the embryo to implant. And so it's all nature just worked it out so beautifully. This is when you wonder if there was a higher power who worked this all out, right? Because you get about two weeks out of that corpus luteum, and then once the embryo implants, it starts making a placenta at 2 weeks. And guess what else? Guess what happens? The placenta starts making progesterone, tons of it. And all those tons of progesterone, one of the reasons to make the progesterone is to turn around and say to the other follicles that developed on your ovaries, go back to sleep. Because ideally, people are supposed to have one baby at a time. Of course, multiple pregnancies happen, but they are rare. The higher the number, the more rare they are. Of course, if you have in vitro fertilization and they implant a lot of embryos, you're more likely to have multiple births. But multiple births are not ideal for humans. We are ideal as one at a time. And that's why the corpus luteum turns off the other follicles. And then when you're making tons of progesterone, it's very, very unlikely that you're going to conceive while you're already pregnant. Cats can do that. They can get pregnant multiple times by multiple partners. But humans, I don't know if humans can and that it's a rare occurrence. I'd say anything is possible, but generally it's not, because the progesterone functions to turn off those follicles so you don't ovulate while you're pregnant, and then you get to focus on that one baby that's growing inside you. So anyway, so if you're going to take natural hormone replacement therapy, if you take an estriol or an estriol, for your whole body, it's a good idea to have progesterone on hand to modulate the effects of the estrogen. So your my understanding is that when you take estrogen, you take progesterone with it, your risk of reproductive cancer is the same as the general population. It's not nothing, but it's the same as the general population. It's the same as it would have been if you hadn't taken the hormone replacement therapy either. The other thing that, and so estrogen, taking the estrogen and progesterone can help with your sex drive. What helps even more with your sex drive is taking testosterone. And the way you take testosterone, you get, a great way to take it is for women is to take it topically. And so what you do is you get it in a certain, in an appropriate concentration, and a compounding pharmacy makes it for you. And you take a little tiny dot of it and you place it on your clitoris. And so you're putting it right where you need it. It does go systemic because you feel it, because it increases your sex drive. And you feel the increased sex drive in your brain. Your brain does feel like, oh, I want to have more sex. And it works very nicely. So if you have it, I think it's a really good idea, because testosterone is definitely a proliferative hormone. And so taking progesterone while you're taking testosterone is a really good idea, because the other thing that you do is if you have vaginal dryness or you have trouble making secretions during sex, of course it's fine to use lube. And when I recommend lube, I like to recommend natural lube. If you get just the plain old stuff from the drugstore, I was using a brand that everybody knows about when I was doing my gynecological exams, because you need some lube to when you're doing the digital exam, as well as when you're inserting the speculum. You put some lube on to make it more comfortable for your patient. Likewise, when you're doing a prostate exam for a man, you use lube. And I looked at the ingredients for just the regular lube that you get from the drugstore, and it's all chemicals. So you can get natural lube, and the main ingredient in natural lube is aloe. You could probably also use just straight up aloe from a plant. If you're going to use like aloe gel, just that's not necessarily intended for lube, just make sure it's unscented and unflavored and uncolored. And you could probably use that. But if it's intended to be used on your genitalia, then it's going to be in a format that is meant for that. And so that's definitely something you can use. You can also use products that have hyaluronic acid in it. And I have an herbalist who makes a salve for my practice that has hyaluronic acid in it. Hyaluronic acid is not hormonal at all. It's something that we do make in our bodies, but it is a wonderful humectant. And a humectant is a substance that draws moisture to it. So I have my face cream has hyaluronic acid in it. That's why I look so lovely and youthful for a 61-year-old person. And so I recommend hyaluronic acid just for, you know, skincare. And, you know, hyaluronic acid could be in your face cream. It can be in your body cream. It can be in your shampoo and your conditioner. I have hyaluronic acid lip balm that I really like. I like to put that on my lips, and it's really great for the winter. I have lots of lip balm, but I have a pot of this special hyaluronic acid lip balm that it goes on every day. All the others, different flavors, different colors, different whatever, I switch around, but the hyaluronic acid balm goes as a base every day. So I get nice moisturized. So that's another thing you can use. If you apply estrogen to your vulva, the thing is, those are just moisturizers. Aloe is a moisturizer. Aloe, when you apply it to your vulva, it's not just a moisturizer. Aloe has allantoin in it. And so the allantoin, so aloe is definitely has humectant properties as well. But it also helps cells to... It helps cells to develop in a more normal way. One of the things you have when you are postmenopausal is because you're not making estrogen and progesterone like you were, is you have involution of the cells of your vulva. So things tend to get dry because you don't have hormones pushing the production, pushing the glands to make their secretions. So sometimes you need a little help. And like I said, you can put humectants directly on. You can put aloe, which is a humectant, but the aloe will also help with the health of the cells. So the cells will develop more normally, and you might get a little more secretion that way. If you put estrogen in some form topically, that will work too. And my understanding from my colleague and former professor at National College, or it's now National University in Portland, Tori Hudson, she said that you can use estradiol topically and there's no higher risk of cancer, that the estrogen acts locally. It doesn't tend to go systemic, and you can use estradiol. It's pretty powerful, and it does help secretions. My patients who get that, you can get that prescribed, and if you get it prescribed and you have a good prescription plan, you might not have to pay extra for it. You can buy over-the-counter estriol cream. So the thing is, you have three forms of estrogen in your body. You have estradiol, estriol, and estrone. Estrone and estradiol are about 10 to 20% of the estrogen in your body, and estriol is 60 to 80% of the estrogen in your body. Guess which one is the weakest? It's the estriol, and the reason for that is nature does not want you to overstimulate your estrogen receptors, because estrogen is proliferative and we don't want things to overgrow. And I need a sip of water with electrolytes. So it's a really good idea to have estriol and estradiol. That's why it's a little bit better to use estriol than the estradiol. My understanding from Tori is that either one is fine, but the estriol is weaker, and you can get it over the counter, and it will help with secretions locally. Once again, whether you use estriol or estradiol, their half-life is pretty short. You get to use it, you know, and what they often tell, the dosing for estradiol will either come in a cream with an applicator that you insert into your vagina, or it'll come in little tablets that, you insert into your vagina. And then you can get estriol cream, that's just cream that you can apply locally. And then it's a really good idea to wash your hands after that if you're going to have sex play with a man. It's not a big deal if you're going to have sex play with, if you're a woman and you're going to have sex play with a woman, it's not a big deal because she can handle the estrogen. If you have sex play with a man, you don't want to touch him with estrogen hands, because that will make his estrogen rise, and it could have side effects, and, you know, it'll dampen his androgens, and you don't want that. I can't remember if it was on a TV show or somewhere that I heard that there was a man who was very kindly applying a woman's estrogen replacement therapy to her body, and because he was touching it, he was getting side effects from it. So men, please don't do that. I don't think it's a good idea for you to be applying it. Or if you do apply it, wear gloves. That's all. Just wear gloves when you do it, if you're going to apply estrogen to a woman or to a trans woman. Doesn't matter. You know, if you're handling estrogen and you're a guy, or you're any kind of guy, whether you're a trans man or a cis man, doesn't matter. If you don't want your estrogen levels to go up and you want to be, you know, androgen dominant, if you're going to handle estrogen, you need to wear gloves. That's all. Or maybe not touch it. But I think wearing gloves is fine. I don't think it'll get through. If you wear just some nitrile gloves, it probably won't get through. So anyway, so topical estrogen, whether it's estradiol or estriol, most women can, they do a 1 week loading cycle. So you use the estradiol or estriol every night for a week. And then after that, you can use it maybe two or three times a week. And then you have more secretions and sex becomes more comfortable. Because when you have vaginal dryness, sex can become painful. I've heard women say that they have pain in intercourse, that they can't tolerate intercourse of any kind. You know, they can't tolerate entry of anything, you know, whatever you're using, toys, hands, penises, doesn't matter. And that one of the descriptors is, it feels like sandpaper. That's no fun. So one of the things that happens if you use estrogen of some form topically is that the tissues become more moist and they become more elastic. So you don't have that sandpaper. The sandpaper feeling is because the tissues are not able to stretch to accommodate whatever you're using them for. So you can be a lot more comfortable if you have that estrogen on board. So I think that's fine to use, and you're very unlikely to get reproductive cancer if you use it. And in fact, I don't know about in the U.S., but in Europe, they use estrogen replacement in women who have had reproductive cancer, whether it's breast cancer or ovarian cancer. So they don't worry about that. Another thing that's easy to take is that's a hormone that's over the counter is DHEA, dihydroepiandrosterone, and you can get that over the counter, and it can help your sex drive. DHEA is a hormone that comes from your adrenal glands, and you make it your whole life. It helps with growth. It helps with sexuality. It helps with body fat composition. It can help you be more muscular. And DHEA, what I usually do when I'm offering DHEA is I offer a 5 milligram dose, and I encourage the woman to play with it. And I will give it to men and women depending on their DHEA levels. Sometimes that's all you need to do for sex drive. It is helpful for sex drive. You take it orally, and it can convert into estrogen, testosterone, and other androgens. And you start with a 5 milligram dose, which is a pretty low dose. And then I encourage the woman to play with the dose, because you can take a lot. You can take 50 milligrams if you need to. But some women, like when I was taking it, I probably should go back to taking it. But when I was taking it, I got up to 15 milligrams, and that was useful for me. So that wasn't a huge dose, and it's not expensive, and it can help with your sex drive. it may or may not help with that topical issue. You may still have to do the topical estrogen, but the DHEA can help with the brain. Like if you don't want to do topical testosterone, you can try the DHEA and you can get that over the counter. You don't have to get it prescribed. So these are all good things that can help. There are other things that are helpful. I think that evening primrose oil, borage oil, and blackcurrant seed oil, what they all have in common is they have a high content of GLA, gamma-linolenic acid, and it's a wonderful anti-inflammatory. It's great for pain, and it does have some, they're said to not be hormonal, and yet they can be helpful for sex drive. So they're doing something. If they're not hormonal, they're hormone adjacent. And I was taking borage oil for a long time. Borage oil per pill has a higher content of GLA, gamma-linolenic acid. I wanted to take it for inflammation. And then one day I decided, like a couple months ago, I decided, you know what? I'm going to go for evening primrose oil and see if it's different. And I'm taking a lower dose of evening primrose oil, and I feel better on it. So I think there's something about evening primrose oil. The GLA, there's something special about evening primrose oil that must not just be about the GLA, because the yield of GLA is lower, and yet you get more effect from it. And so the dose pills that you get tend to be smaller. Because, you know, when you buy borage oil, it tends to be 1,000 milligram pills, and evening primrose oil, you can get 1,000 milligram pills, but you frequently get 500 milligram pills, and you take two, and it's helpful. So I think that's a nice thing to help. We offer evening primrose oil for menopause, because the anti-inflammatory effects can help with hot flashes, but it seems to also help with calming and sex drive and other things that happen with your menopause symptoms. There's Damiana. So Damiana is something that you can take, that it's an herb that you can take for sex drive that can help too. Tribulus is another one, and you can try those. There are blends that you can get that have different herbs in them, and Damiana and Tribulus are two herbs that tend to be somewhat helpful. They're kind of helpful. I've seen them work. I've seen them not work. Sleep is really good for your sex drive. If you're not getting adequate sleep, you need to work on your sleep, because if your body's tired, it's going to be working on trying to get you energetic just so you can function, and you're not going to have good reproductive hormone function if you're not getting adequate sleep. Adequate sleep will help you to have more sex hormones. In fact, if you have a really good night's sleep, you're going to wake up with higher levels of sex hormones than if you have a poor night's sleep. So if you have sleep issues, get them fixed, really. If you think you have sleep apnea, get that sleep study done, and then get a CPAP or get a device or get something that helps you to not have sleep apnea so that you can sleep properly. And, you know, if there are other reasons why you're not sleeping, get that fixed too. Hormone replacement can help with sleep. One of the things that happens is when you get older, you don't sleep as well. So sometimes women will do hormone replacement therapy and they sleep a lot better. I do have a patient who went and got herself some natural hormone replacement therapy, and she said her sleep is so good now. It's really good, and she wakes up refreshed, and she's very happy. So that's something you can do. So the hormones themselves can help you to sleep better, as well as improve your sex drive. So that's a good thing. Stress is not good for your sex drive. So I've told this story a lot. I will tell it again. What I like to tell my patients is that, so say your name is Jane. Nature wants Jane to survive. Now I'm thinking about Rizzoli and Isles, because the main character is Jane. Anyway, so we want Jane to survive. Jane's going to survive one of two ways. One is that Jane is going to be protected from danger, or Jane is going to make more little Janes. And in the TV series, Jane never had a baby, but in the book she did. Spoiler alert, sorry. And it wasn't very far. It was like in book two, she was pregnant. In book three, she had the baby. And the baby's name is Regina. Now you know. Okay. So anyway, so we want Jane to be safe. So if Jane is running away from criminals, we don't want her to be pregnant. Although that happened in the book. She was still working when she was pregnant as a detective. We would prefer that Jane was able to rest if she was pregnant, because it's harder for her to run away from the criminals if she's pregnant. So if Jane is under stress, having to run away from stuff, we are going to make it so that she has extra cortisol, and that cortisol is going to suppress her ovulation. She's going to be less likely to ovulate, and even if she ovulates, she's going to be less likely to conceive, and that way we save Jane's life, and Jane continues to maybe have a baby later on. The neat thing about that is that cortisol, neat, and what's not so neat also, is that cortisol, which is your stress hormone, suppresses your reproductive hormones. And so it's brilliant because if you're running away from bears, we don't want you to get pregnant. So we're going to make it harder for you to get pregnant by having a lot of cortisol around. The other thing that happens is if you ovulate while you're under stress, there's an easy two-step process to convert progesterone, which is, remember, it's coming from the corpus luteum, to convert it to cortisol. So we're going to steal from your progesterone and make it harder for you to implant. And so you're less likely to implant, so you're less likely to get pregnant when you're under stress. So just realize that if you're very stressed trying to conceive, one of the antidotes for that is stress reduction. Well, if you want to feel sexual, you also need to reduce stress because, you know, you have a desire to have sex that's, you know, ultimately the goal is to conceive. But in human sexuality, of course, you don't just have sex to conceive. You have sex because it's pleasurable, it's bonding, it's social, it makes you feel really good, it's stress reducing, it's all those wonderful things. We don't just have sex to have babies. We have sex to connect with each other and all those other wonderful reasons. So, and that's why this 80-year-old lady still wants to have sex because she enjoys it. Just plain, it's good for you and it's fun and it's pleasurable. These are all good reasons to have sex. So if you reduce your stress, you're just going to feel better because you're less stressed. But by the way, you will have more active reproductive hormones. And so you're going to feel more sexual, you're going to want to have sex more, and you're going to enjoy your sex more. So stress reduction all by itself can help with your sex drive and help with your sexual performance and all kinds of sex stuff. So how do you do stress reduction? The usual. You look at your life. You look at what is stressing you out. Are there some things that can be resolved? Are there some things you're doing that you could do less of? Once you figure that out, then you look at, it's always a good idea to have restorative activities that you're doing. So these are things that you do regardless of what your stressors are to help you to reduce stress. And that's your deep breathing, your meditation, your yin and restorative yoga, your any kind of yoga, your exercise, your petting your animals, spending time with animals, spending time with children, laughter, spending time with friends, spending time doing nothing, just lying around the house, having a hot beverage. So all of these things help to reduce stress. I don't recommend relying on having alcohol. Alcohol will calm you down in the short term. And if you rely on alcohol to calm you down in the long term, it will make you more stressed because it's heavy on your liver and it uses things like magnesium and B vitamins for its metabolism. And these are things you need to have you be calmer and have you metabolize your, among other things, your reproductive hormones. So excess alcohol doesn't work. A little bit of alcohol can help to grease the wheels and make you feel better, but relying on alcohol all the time doesn't help your sexuality. Caffeine also can mess with your sexuality. Not everybody, but for some people, I think in my case, it probably does because I'm such a caffeine lightweight. And because, you know, caffeine basically increases, it can increase your dopamine, which is going to help you with your feel more sexual and more have more pleasure. But it also can, because it helps you release more cortisol. You have more fight or flight going on. Fight or flight is not a state you want to be in if you want to be sexual. So, and I say that with a caveat too, because sometimes people get very excited about something and then they do want to be sexual. So it kind of goes both ways. But if you're overdoing caffeine, you might find that your reproductive hormones are suppressed. The more rested and relaxed you are, the more sexual you're going to feel. And then the more you're going to enjoy your sex. So, and this goes for whether you're male or female, trans or cis. The more relaxed you are, the more you're going to feel good about that. So there you go. So happy Valentine's Day. Those are some things that can be helpful for sex and sexuality, and for women, you can do hormone replacement, but men, I should say, too, can do hormone replacement therapy. Definitely, you can go to either urologists or places that specialize in hormone replacement therapy, and you can get hormone replacement therapy for men. Some men get their testosterone checked and find that it's quite low, so they take exogenous testosterone. And that's fine to do if your testosterone is low and you want to feel good. You can certainly do that. So, all right. So that's what's going on with that. I have just a few more minutes to talk to you about stuff. Let me go ahead. Let's rehash that B vitamin stuff, because I did have a whole paragraph about talking about the stomach upset from B vitamins. So I've taken B complex in the past and found that especially after a couple of hours, I get heartburn and mild nausea from them. For a few months, I was able to take a food-based B complex with no trouble. Then in the last little while, I noticed a lot of queasiness an hour or so after taking my protein shake with the B complex, and I left out the food-based B vitamin, and problem solved. So now I take the separate B12, B6, and folic acid with no trouble, and as well as a low dose of methylfolate, and I'll take that on alternate days. And as I told you, I'm heterozygous for the C677T variant of the MTHFR gene. You can get that tested. The problem is that if you get it tested by a physician and you try to use your insurance to get it covered, it often won't be covered. So you will have to pay it for it out of pocket. There are ways to do it, because you can do one of those ancestry programs that you pay for, and then they give you the opportunity to download your raw data. Then you take the raw data to a site that will test you for methylation factors, not just MTHR, but a whole bunch of stuff for not very much money. And you can find out your methylation status, and not just for MTHFR, but MTRR, COMT, a whole bunch of other what we call SNPs, single nucleotide polymorphisms. And you can get a gist of what your methylation status is and if there are some things you can do to help it. And then you also get your doc to test your homocysteine and see if it's elevated. So if you have the C677T variant of the MTHFR gene, you tend to convert folic acid to active folate at a slower rate than normal. With the level of inflammation that I've had with the post-vaccine issues and chronic Lyme, I have had mildly elevated homocysteine, which can raise your cholesterol and cause increased blood clotting. So my tummy has been able to handle these separate doses of things. And with the, as I said too, the nicotine riboside that's in the collagen, it's not bothering me, which is great. And then, so the other B vitamins I just have to get from my food. I've taken benfotiamine in the past, which is that's activated B1, which is a great thing to take if you have diabetes, to help to lower your hemoglobin A1C, regulate blood sugar, and also to help with neuropathy of any kind. So those B vitamins, in my experience, have not been, haven't had a problem with those. As I said before, high dose riboflavin, I was not able to do. So that's the deal with the B complex. If you're having stomach upset with B complex, try the food-based, and if the food-based doesn't work and there's certain ones that you need, you can get tested for your levels of those various ones, and then just take them separately and see if you can tolerate those. Vitamin B3, which I'm no longer taking, I'm getting it in the collagen. There's research that shows that vitamin B3 in the form of niacinamide can be effective in increasing joint mobility. There are studies that have found that increased niacin intake may be associated with lower levels of joint pain, plus decreased inflammation, which is associated with conditions like osteoarthritis. So I'm getting that in with the collagen. So there's studies that show that prescribed high doses of niacinamide demonstrated in studies to improve flexibility, reduce swelling, and allowed many who take niacinamide to be able to cut down on standard painkillers or medications for arthritis, which is a really good thing because the anti-inflammatories you take for arthritis are all problematic. So whether you take aspirin or ibuprofen or naproxen, or Tylenol. Tylenol, of course, if you take enough acetaminophen, it can give you liver toxicity. And the NSAIDs, the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, can get ulcerations in your stomach. So that means that if it's a COX-2 inhibitor, like your celecoxib or your any of those COXIB, those are COXIB means COX inhibitor, COX-2 inhibitor. So those compounds can give you ulcerations. So can too much naproxen, so can too much ibuprofen, and so can aspirin, of course. And so if you can take niacinamide, which doesn't do that, and you may not need those anti-inflammatories. I almost never take those. I only take them if I'm in such extreme pain that and I'll take a naproxen sometimes if I'm having nerve pain. So if I'm having femoral neuralgia from having sciatica, and I haven't had that. I've been pretty good with that for many months now. I'm very grateful. So, and that may be because of the amount of fish oil I'm taking, the gamma linolenic acid. I do take anti-inflammatories like curcumin and green tea, and of course the Japanese knotweed. The lime herbs that I'm taking have anti-inflammatory properties, especially Japanese knotweed. So I am not needing to take pharmaceuticals for pain at all. So I'm very excited. So as a treatment for osteoarthritis and joint and bone pain, niacin is normally prescribed in high doses for its anti-inflammatory effects. Reducing inflammation can help reduce symptoms of arthritis and rebuild the joint cartilage that's crucial to mobility and strength, along with things like collagen and greenlit muscle. So we'll take a little bit deeper dive into greenlit muscle next time I meet with you. So anyway, so I think we're good. That's a lot of stuff. So we talked about, some of the things that are going on, having the B vitamins, and the big thing was hormonal remedies and other remedies so that you can enjoy, especially for peri and postmenopausal women, that you can enjoy your sexuality later in life. So I'm going to let you go. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS stores, and WHUS.org.